from Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Hour number three is now underway. 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the show, what you got to do, you got to text me, and we will respond to whatever it is that might be on your mind. So to come, Will Hampson from P2 Public Affairs, and we'll talk a little bit about midterms. That seems to be where a lot of the interest is. Congress is back in, but, despite the best efforts of our friends at Fox News to really kind of force the issue, the Save America Act probably is not going to be a part of the agenda. But what are they doing there? And my guess is you're going to see a bunch of messaging bills. And it's kind of sad, but it's what it is, because they'll pass a bunch of legislation that Democrats will absolutely not vote for. And those Democrats will face campaign ads stating that they voted to keep transgender boys in girls' locker rooms or something. Those kinds of things. A condemnation of communism, and Democrats will just vote against it. Shamari figures refused to condemn communism. Actually, he didn't. He said it out. But the Terry Sewell, she is a commie plant. You could just see it. But that's sort of the name of the game here. Let's go through some text here. Mike, if women can't be held accountable because of their hormones, then they should participate in political life for any decisions of importance. We can't, and I know you're being tongue-in-cheek here, but the problem with that is, it's one size fits all. If men can't keep their anger in check and not go out and murder someone, then maybe men should not be qualified to be in high office. Do you understand the thinking there? So you can't really do that, Mike. Be dark. Hey, Jeff, was going to tell you first thing this morning, Auburn looked good Saturday. I don't think that they did. Be dark. You won the game, but the offense still is kind of sputtering. I'd say Byron Brown had, a lot of time in the pocket a few of those series. He's not as impressive as he was built up to be running the ball. He did have that touchdown late in the game. But he's not the second coming of Cam Newton, as some of our friends in the Auburn media have suggested. I don't think he's bad. I think this is a improved team based on, where we were a year ago. But remember, Hugh Freeze beat Baylor, too, in Waco, much more convincingly. I don't think Waco is, Baylor is Georgia or Texas A&M or, Texas or whatever. So still kind of same place I was heading into the season. A lot of unknowns. Kind of have an idea of what to expect, but even Golish in his comments after the game acknowledged, hey, we got a lot to work on. And he went over celebratory. I like that. I think that's a big difference here. We're probably going to hit on a lot of this tomorrow night on the Tiger Talk Overtime with Josh Moon and I. But, just kind of looking at it like the crowd there in Atlanta. Supposed to be an Auburn home game. And it was funny because, when I was looking, considering going, the tickets were just, they were kind of high. Yes, I'm used to going to these baseball games And you'll pay, you know, $50 for a ticket, but we're talking like $200 for a good, decent seat. And then the bottom just dropped out of the market. And those tickets, I mean, when, you know, an hour before kickoff, I took a look on some of the third-party websites, and they were like $2. So, you know, Auburn fans at the last minute kind of, I don't think we're going to go to Atlanta this weekend, kind of like me. DI Texter, the Holmes Bridge on 59 over the Intercoastal Waterway, Gulf Shores, has now three lanes southbound after restriping, although it's not nearly as long as the Bayway. Yeah, somebody mentioned that to me when we were discussing this. But you could control the traffic on that bridge a lot better than you can, I believe, on a 7 miles or 6 mile, in this case, safe stretch of road. I think that has probably improved things. You know, a solution like this restriping is not a bad idea under the right circumstances. Because that's not a high-speed thoroughfare. I mean, I wouldn't go out and play in traffic there, but I also am not, you know, it's not a busy expressway. Because some places that works, but they got to give us a little more to look at here. Okay, this is a temporary fix. I'm not going to be in my 80s trying to cross the Bayway for whatever reason. Lord, help me. And it be this like 6-lane narrow highway. I would hope not. You know, you're just going to take the air taxi. Okay, George Jetson. Unnamed texture. Morning, Joe. Just divert commercial traffic to the Africatown Bridge 3 to 7 p.m. daily, and this will alleviate a lot of the backups. Similar to how the hazardous cargo is diverted. Thanks to Jeff from Dafty. You know, they tried that. Y'all remember that? They were diverting the 18-wheeler traffic out of the tunnel it was like a holiday weekend. And the Trucking Association lost its mind. The problem with the Africatown Cochrane Bridge is that you can't get to it. It's not a simple, I mean, in theory, I guess you're coming east, you get on 65, and then you go to 165, and then you get off the bridge, and you make the right-hand turn there, or the left-hand turn there, and go across. But if they're going to utilize that expensive bridge, they never really had a good plan how to maximize it. It just was like, it's just there. They could do a lot more on the Baldwin County side as well. Well, I guess that's still Mobile County. On the eastern side of the Cochrane Bridge, too, because the traffic will back up if you're coming down that route and you get to where the Bankhead Tunnel empties and the causeway begins, and then there's that on-ramp there onto the interstate, and they got it blocked off. That traffic backing up toward the Cochrane Bridge seems like they could have engineered something a little better. Maybe that's a better use of our tax dollars. Don, good morning. Jeff, on the game Saturday. I don't know if you got to go or not. I did not. That was a nail-biting game, much like Gus Malzahn used to do every play. I've never seen so many people chanting a cat hair against Baylor. Wow. They showed up to play, didn't they? What happens going forward, do you think? I don't know that Baylor is the best test. And I am worried. Should be okay against Southern Miss. The Florida game will be very interesting. They're not, you know, they're not unbeatable. They're not ranked. There's some other games. Who knows what Vanderbilt's probably not very good. couple of road games, Georgia, Tennessee. The team, my hope is the team will improve. So we'll see. But I think, you know, everything else, other teams, our other opponents will improve as well. Philip writes, I've got a TikTok video about the tunnel proving that it's not the incline or the curve slowing down. TikTok is Stacy and Philip. We'll check it out, Stacy and Philip. It does seem like that truck traffic does hit like a wall coming out of the tunnel as they're shifting gears. Backstrap, we have been piecemealing this bridge with this lane to three. And what's going to happen when someone blows a tire, gets killed trying to change a tire? Also, what's going to happen when three lanes go to two in Daphne? Band-aid on a hatchet wound. I agree. What are you going to do when someone blows a tire? I've had flat tires. I'm not going to be able to drive 6 miles to the other side. This is, you know, you have these rear-end pile-ups. What if there's a fog situation? Imagine that fear. You got your kids in the car. You lose a tire. There's debris on the roadway because we have that happen in Alabama with little penalty. Something goes wrong. It's foggy out. You're stuck on the bayway and someone rear-ends you because they can't see you. I don't like this. I really don't. But I'm told this is the art of the possible. The idea of, you know, what's going to happen after that first fatality. We've had pileups on that bayway before. This sounds to me like a disaster, actually. Well, Jeff, you're smart. You'll take the causeway. I'm not worried about me. I mean, there are other human beings who may not be as aware. My name, Texture. I think the biggest help to the track problem at I-10 is going to be the Baldwin Beach extension to I-65. Really? I don't know about that. You could already use 59. It's not you get to Bay Minette and things slow down, but it's not as if there's a lot of traffic on that route. And the new extension to 65, I think like a 2-lane toll road. So I'm not sure that that's going to be the fix either. Named Texter, the NCAA would have changed the rule, saying January 2026 instead of June 2026, the 545 rule would not be an issue. It'd be a one-time deal and ended now. But the way they did it cost all the court issues for the players. I agree with that. Yeah, I call this the Lane Kiffin thing. That's why it's always in the press as Lane Kiffin. The issue started out as 400 players, now it's 300 players. Yes, there's some in Louisiana. There's some in Texas, Kentucky, Missouri, South Carolina, and other states. So it's not just Lane Kiffin. If you quit characterizing it as Lane Kiffin and not a college NCAA issue. They like to make Lane Kiffin the boogeyman. 251-343-0106. We will return. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Guys in first class on a flight from New York to Los Angeles. Kind of making small talk, killing time, flirting with the flight attendant. Oh, mama, can this really be the end? To be stuck inside of Moby with the Memphis Blues again. Mona, try.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. I need to get through some text real quick here. I need text. Last time I went to the war from Carolina, it took 2 hours. I could drive to New Orleans 2 hours, 15 minutes. Two guys I would never wanted Auburn or Urban Meyer and Lane Kiffin. If you like two honorable mentions there, Dan Mullen and Jimbo Fisher. John. not debating is a sign of not being able to take the pressure of the job. I disagree. Coach debated in his run in 2020. I moderated the debate. Yeah, I thought he did okay. Lake Pontchartrain Causeway is four lanes over the lake with no breakdown lanes. That lasts for 24 miles. They have personnel stationed in tugboats to assist people cars need to be removed due to car problems. Well, that won't be expensive, will it? But maybe that's the way they got to go, John. Haywood, six-lane stripe bayway will see more paint swapped and wall pushes in an 80s NASCAR race. The governor, I mean, let's see, let's keep going here. Unnamed texture, yet out lawyer was too sorry to get his client off, now puts the President Trump back. Jeff, do you see where Clancy's lawyer has asked for President Trump to pardon his client? No way should my president pardon that woman. The nerve of that lawyer. Why not ask, though? Besides, the presidential pardon is not going to absolve her of any state crimes. Let's be honest. DJ Durkin saved the game, just as he did many times for Freeze. He deserves a head coaching job. Durkin's got some baggage, though. Mike, how excited are Auburn fans about the upcoming game with my Gators? And a lot of Florida fans are feeling good about the way our team looks. That'll be the first big test. Wide load 18-wheelers will make a narrow bayway really bad. I think they're going to be diverted to the causeway. Yeah, and then somebody sent me a picture of the restriped 59 bridge. Old guy. It's tight, but I think that the causeway will be tighter than this. Unnamed texter, Meta has $1 billion slush fund to pay for local projects. Why has nobody called Meta to help fund the bridge? I only need some Meta data centers here, I think. Paul, I think Baylor is probably better than we knew they were. The next few weeks will let us know. Spent a bunch on DL, and it showed up in the game bigly on defensive line. And then one more here. I agree with you, Jeff, that restriping the bayway to do away with the emergency lane stop lane is dangerous. There will be no place to get traffic in the event of a car tire failure. Restriping without widening defies common sense. The road would be safer if left two lanes until the funds are amassed to widen it. It just sounds like they got this big bridge. What are we going to do with it? Okay, well, the traffic's going to funnel into from six lanes to four lanes. You know, and it's all going to come right there together. Maybe you just put a stoplight like they do in these major American cities getting on the freeway. Oh, y'all are going to hate that if they try to do that. And you try to engineer the traffic flow on and off of the bayway. And that way you don't have the merging delays. You got to do something. I don't know that this sounds like the plans are in place. Got to look at some of the plans that have been drawn, and they got three lanes in each direction drawn up on the plan. I'm no highway engineer, and like Jerry Carl says, you know, he's hoping the engineers know, but we've had some boneheaded decisions. These engineers, I think, put like an emphasis on traffic count and numbers, and it's more of a mathematics equation than it is just like how does this really work in practicality, in practice? Mike, I think I'm going to go to Stockton Exit and back down through Spanish Fort to avoid the restripe bayway will become a commonplace. You still have the causeway. Motorman, Jeff, I'm sure you know, but the ones that don't oversize and wide loads will have to follow the routes given if it's a permitted load. Yeah, but they could change that. Shane, I really hope they don't bring California on ramp lights. That might be the best solution here. That might be the way they have to do it. It's something that's very far. Well, I mean, we do new things all the time. the Divergent Diamond and the proliferation of these roundabouts, like crop circles in the sky all over the landscape. But Shane, I am not crazy about this restriping concept. I need to see an elevation. But I just know how people have been driving for decades on the Bayway. Are they gonna, you know, the habits that you're accustomed to? Are you gonna slow down? There's a human element here. Everything's not doesn't always go as planned. And that has to be part of the calculus, and I'm not sure it is. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Borst Show at FM Talk 106.5. I still welcome back to the Jeff Borst Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. Time permitting, we will get to any more text. Keep them coming, and we'll do our best to address them. Joining us now for P2 Public Affairs, our Tuesday regular, Will Hampson. Will, good morning. How are you?
Jeff, doing great. Glad to be with you as always.
Thank you for making time. How was your Labor Day?
It was good. A little quiet. Went to the Texas Rangers game. Got to see that stadium for the first time, so enjoyed that.
It's a nice indoor facility, given the time of year. But
it's great on the inside, Jeff. It's one of those, because they have the old Rangers stadium right next to it, which is beautiful, right. Really nice brick, you know, so it's almost kind of a shame where you pull up and there's this beautiful stadium next door. Then you've got this kind of generic stadium feel. But once you get in, it's obviously a lot better than having to watch a game in an open stadium in the Texas heat. So I definitely get it. But it is a little bit of a shame we don't build beautiful things anymore, Jeff.
Well, they need to start with building some parking around Globe Life. That's my biggest memory, was getting from the car to the stadium to watch the Braves get clobbered by the Rangers a year ago. But that's my one gripe. But once you get in, you're right. It's like Disney World.
Yeah, great on the inside, but again, it seems like we could build a little bit more, because a lot of these stadiums you pull up now and it's like, yeah, I've seen this before. It's every other stadium. It's kind of a shame, but then you get in and you're like, oh, it's air conditioned. It's, you know, it feels
great.
You got
good sight lines, you know, the angles are great. Yeah, Milwaukee's a lot like that. But you just build them all like Wrigley and Fenway, but you got these like support beams like obstructing some of the views, and I don't know. I'm just I get into the modernity of baseball right now and making it accessible to people, but they got to kind of find that happy medium. So I thought Camden Yards does a good job and places like that, something kind of in between.
Absolutely. No, there's definitely give and take. I was at Fenway Park and there was a thunderstorm and everyone goes underneath and it literally feels like the stadium is about to come down on top of you. The whole thing is shaking and you can feel all 100+ years in some of those moments. So absolutely some give and take. It would be nice if we could build some of these pretty stadiums like we used to.
Yeah, it just getting more fans and the climate control. You go to like Miami is the poster child for this problem, because you go there, and inside it's pretty cool. There's nobody there, so like you have your run of the park, but it's just like a wasteland, dystopian concrete wasteland around the park.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a little bit weird in Miami. You almost feel like you're pulling up to like a business building. And then you go up the escalators and there, you know, lo and behold, is a baseball field. But some of these places are weird, but I get it, right? I mean, Dallas is a perfect example. Miami is a perfect example. How many people that aren't diehard baseball fans would sit through, a 98 degree Miami day in an open stadium, just dripping in sweat to watch a game?
Somehow they
struggle with attendance anyway. But
they pull it off at Truist, but I am not like, and I know we're talking too much sports ball here, but having made this like a part of my life here lately, the Truist is the baseline. Like they built up a nice little entertainment district around the stadium, but it still just kind of has this like cookie cutter feel to it. You know, like, oh, I've seen this before. And like, you know, some of the sight lines are cool and it's, you know, but is this really what people want to spend their Tuesday night at? And that's, it's not quite, it's just not quite there. Maybe they're trying to do a little bit with it more to some of these other ballparks, are make it a destination rather than just a, you know, a sports venue for whatever.
And it is cool. You've got some of those restaurants out there and places to hang out before and after the game. It's nice. I get it. But, you know, I think Atlanta's a good example, too, where Turner Field was a great place to watch a game. Now, I get all of the issues. I mean, you're in inner city Atlanta. There's nowhere to park. I get that there were issues. You want to move out a little bit closer into, you know, into Cobb County towards the money where your season ticket holders are. I get it all. But some of these places, Turner Field, once you got in there, it was a great place to watch a game.
But there was just, they could have done, the city of Atlanta could have done more to develop the land around there.
Absolutely.
And then they had, you know, where Atlanta Fulton County Stadium had been, they could have done something with that. And they could have made it, and there was opportunity there, and I think that's why the Braves left. They built the Mercedes Stadium, football stadium, where Auburn played, that I did not go to, and they kind of looked at the Braves as kind of the secondhand franchise, and the Braves said, all right, we'll go move somewhere else, and, you know, it's working for them. They're making money off of real estate out there.
Absolutely. You see it all the time, Jeff. I mean, I'm a big Buffalo Bills fan. They just rebuilt a brand new stadium, all the bells and whistles, and you've got some obstructed views in that new stadium that they just spent $2 billion on. You know, and at some point, the character is the point, and it seems like we do kind of lose sight of that.
Yeah, some places make it work, where, you know, like Houston kind of makes it work. Some places will build the stadium in an existing downtown setting. And I think that's like you get all of the like ambiance of the city and, you know, the local cuisines and bars and whatever, rather than just, all right, we have, you know, this acreage out on the edge of town, let's put it here. And then this is where Mobile went wrong with their minor league franchise. They tried to build the stadium thinking it was going to be this economic draw, this, you know, development package, and it just never took off. And next thing you know, they're moving to Huntsville.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you've seen that in Huntsville. Obviously, they built, you know, that whole operation out there with restaurants and places to go and stay there. You know, because to your point, the economics of it, Jeff, I mean, you get in Major League Baseball, you get 81 home games. That's 81 days a year. Where you've got an event out at that baseball stadium, that's not a lot. You got to find ways to kind of keep that engine moving, and it is interesting to see how some of these cities are starting to try and do that.
Is the Huntsville thing, because it was like the to-die-for minor league, you know, you had the unique name, and they built a interstate exchange there off of 565. Is it still kind of still a big draw the way it was when they first launched it?
Yeah, it is. And I think it was really interesting, Jeff, because a lot of the, you know, the advertisers and Toyota Field, Toyota, they all signed up for kind of a 3-year agreement there. And then COVID hit and they had to delay. Obviously, 2020 was supposed to be the inaugural season. There wasn't a minor league season. So there was supposed to be a Margaritaville with, you know, a lazy river where the pool went right up to the outfield fence, some of that stuff that didn't end up happening. But after 3 years, pretty much all of the sponsors like Toyota, they re-upped their contracts, re-signed. So for now, at least, everything going pretty well there. And if I know you've gone to that stadium, you go to games all the time. They still, I think, have one of the best attendances at least in the Southern League, if not minor league baseball. So they're definitely still doing some things right.
Yeah, and I tell you, we did all the Southern League stadiums last year. Now, we did the Chattanooga has a new facility. I haven't been to that yet, but the ones I was really impressed with was Knoxville and Birmingham. Now, region, I liked what they did there. The Hoover thing just never had the character, and it was another one of these examples. Hey, let's build this big park, and they will come. And now that the Barons have moved back downtown, that area of Birmingham's really grown, and you know it's living up to its billing without the minor league franchise. But you know, Huntsville's somewhere in between there. But there's certain you're seeing the minor league ballparks kind of catch up with this phenomenon. They can't build a big dome. They're not going to do that, but they're trying to make it a little more, you know, you can put a playground and all that in, but it does kind of feel like you're at a big time sporting event when you go to Birmingham and when you go to Knoxville.
Absolutely. And a lot of these teams have had to do a good job, not, you know, obviously going Savannah banana levels of entertainment, but there is definitely a little bit more of a focus, I think, on the fan experience at some of these minor league parks than there is at a major league game. I mean, I think everyone understands if you're going to a Braves game, you're going because you want to watch the best players in the world play the game. The minor league atmosphere is a little bit different. Obviously, the players are less known. There are sometimes, you know, some top prospects, but I think a lot of these places and these new stadiums do a good job of really incorporating the fan experience. And I think it's certainly made a big difference. The ones that have kind of gotten that right have really been successful.
Yeah, the challenge with minor league ball, and, you know, making this about baseball, but your ultimate destination is creating like a kind of a city pride around a team. Like, this is our team, right? This is, and I tell you what they do. I think they do a really good job in Biloxi, Mississippi with the Shuckers. And you know, it's like you said, it just feels like you're going to see the circus comes to town and you're going to go see it, and you don't really have that connection. That's where Mobile went wrong. But I feel like with the Barons to some degree, certainly with Biloxi, maybe Pensacola, but some of these places, certainly the Lookouts have that. These long-established teams, that's our team. And, you know, we may not know who the players are because they change every season, but there's sort of this pride that goes along with the same way like a, you know, your college team does, or your professional sports franchise. People are Bears fans because we're all Chicagoans or whatever, you know, Buffalo, like you're a fan of. That's the trick, is incorporating, earning the respect of the locality and giving them ownership in the team.
100%, Jeff. And if you look at some of the stuff that they do in some of the places that are really successful in that, like when we played UAB every year at Regions Field, and people would come out, they wanted to check out their hometown team, and they'd be a little bit more willing to do that when they were playing at Regions Field versus on campus. Chattanooga does a really good job. The Lookouts every year play the local community college, Chattanooga State, in an exhibition game before their season starts. A chance for, you know, people to see the pro guys playing against the local college guys. So some of these places, Huntsville is hosting the SEC tournament, softball tournament, going to get some, I think, really good community participation in that when the SEC softball players come to town. So you've got some of these places that I think do a really good job of getting that community buy-in. And that's huge when you're talking about anything, right, Jeff? I mean, we hear the same argument when we're talking about data centers, about how some of these companies should come in and get local buy-in. That local buy-in, to your point, when I feel like I've got a stake in what's going on in my own backyard, I'm much more willing to go to the mat for it. And I think you've seen some of these places, whether it be sports or economics. Huntsville, I think, has done a really great job of doing the same thing, where there's a lot of buy-in with some of these, you know, big companies that come to town. Mobile obviously has done a good job of that. There's a lot of pride in Austell and Airbus and some of the good things going on down there. So that you look at the buy-in from the community, and no matter what it is a really, really big deal that sometimes is taken for granted. But when you look and you kind of go, this place is doing it right, there usually is a pretty large scale investment in the community that's going on there.
Yeah, I just, you know, you get people to, like, in 2018, when Tommy Battle was running for governor, now, He was really, they were really worried about this, losing the Mobile vote because Huntsville was taking the minor league baseball team. I don't think it mattered, but it mattered in their head. And they were so worried about it that I think that cost Huntsville, and they wound up putting that team in Madison and not in Huntsville, which was probably a smart business move in the long run. But the idea Huntsville and this mayor was robbing Mobile was going to cost him votes in that gubernatorial primary.
Yeah, absolutely. Super interesting. It is not a coincidence that they're called Rocket City, not Huntsville or Madison trash pandas. There's absolutely something there. And yeah, I mean, people still obviously the legacy of Mayor Tommy Battle in Huntsville is going to be great. People in Huntsville love him. But that is something that gets brought up where, you know, geez, it really is a shame that, you know, Huntsville itself was not able to get this now really thriving team. It is interesting how some of those dynamics of the moment really can affect some long-term decision-making. Because I think if you go and ask Mayor Battle right now today in 2026, would you like to have the Trash Pandas in Huntsville? He'd go, absolutely.
Did you ever play at Joe Davis there on Memorial Parkway?
I've been there. I never played there. It was shut down before before my career got going. But yeah, still and great now. I mean, revived and thriving.
They still use it. Yeah, as I say, every now and then they'll play a game out there, but it'll be like a throwback to the Oakland A's when they were the A's. And they'll bring in Ozzy and Jose Canseco or whatever. Because that was the time when they were the Huntsville Stars, they were, and the A's were doing really well, that was sort of the pipeline to the Oakland Athletics.
And that's the cool thing, looking back at some of these minor league stadiums, when you look, you know, 30 years or more back and kind of look at some of the guys who came through. I mean, who would have known in the moment? Maybe there were people, obviously, that knew what Jose Canseco and some of those guys would become. But it really is kind of cool that you know, you are getting the stars of tomorrow, but you don't always know who they are. Sometimes that top prospect doesn't end up panning out, and sometimes that more obscure guy ends up becoming a Hall of Famer, and it's really cool to go back and look and say, hey, all these guys came through our town.
This baseball discussion brought to you by B2 Public Affairs. Will, we got to get out of here. We're out of time, but folks want to find you online. How can they do so?
The Will Hampson on X.
Will Hampson, ladies and gentlemen, Will, we appreciate it. Let's get another break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
And they still aren't seen. Sadly in search of one step in back of themselves and their slow moving dreams.
To the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on what's left of this Tuesday morning. Real quick, the Bayway is 4 lanes wide. We utilize 2 for running lanes and emergency lane on each side. Our new plan, there will be just a half lane on each side, but we'll be monitored by cameras and react to immediately should someone need to pull over like they do now when someone breaks down in the tunnel. Mike, I really envisioned this restripe Bayway to be like the scene out of Mad Max. Maybe us locals just need to invest in SWAT-style tactical vehicles in order to get back and forth safely. Ultra Runner Aldot deal is paying top dollar for a high-class escort and still getting herpes. Well, that's a nice analogy. And then Toothless Bammer enjoyed the baseball talk with your last hour guest. Who needs Clay and Buck? I can't tell if you're being sarcastic or not, but I appreciate it either way. Cut up here shortly. Midday Mobile. Sean, what you got?
Well, I have been thinking about very narrow emergency vehicles. If we could redesign them, you know, kind of like...
It's going to be like the golf cart expressway.
Yeah, like tighten the wheelbases for the emergency vehicle. Or like helicopters, like we talked about in the past, could get out there and help for the emergency situations on the Bayway. We're restriping. You know,
yes. The Pontchartrain idea with the tugboats. And then we just have like a big crane that picks up the cars and takes them off of the bridge.
But here's the problem. The water is not deep enough. If you look at the way the delta spills out, you have channels and you have flats. So you don't have a uniform depth going east to west across there. Have to be an airboat with a crane. So because you have big winter blowout, you know, a lot of that's just mud there. So that's why, you know, something logical like a helicopter, we could be moving with that.
It can air, that won't be cost prohibitive at all, will it?
No. Just an idea. And by the way, too, just like we're restriping the Bayway, yesterday, starting a week off on Monday morning, I didn't like what the scale said, so I reset the scale. So, and put it in the negative and stood on it and gave me the number I wanted. So that's good. Then that obviously I've lost weight.
I mean, I'm not usually like one of these guys who gets all alarmist about solar panels or data. But this is like, when you're driving to Biloxi this weekend and kind of looking at it, it's like, there's no way. Like,
we got to put a tape measure on it. Maybe somebody can post up the numbers. I don't know who would dare to put a tape, but what is the width from, you know, one side to the other? I don't know what that width is. How many?
It's just, and I was talking to somebody about it, is like, decades of muscle memory and habits you're going to have to break here.
Big time. I mean, you've parked here many times at the studios of FM Talk 106.5, where they got more parking places in here because they made them so narrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if somebody's like an inch over, they screw up four parking places. So, oh well.
Well, that's a Sean pet peeve, by the way, as I have learned.
I like good parking, yes.
Sometimes a culprit here of this. Yeah.
Hey, by the way, Sheriff's coming up in just a minute here, y'all.
All right, y'all stick around for that. I got to get out of here. We'll try to do better tomorrow. Sorry, Phyllis, I forgot to say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.